welcome to the Holistic You podcast. I'm your host, James Weiler. The purpose of this podcast is to teach you the things you didn't get taught in school, to teach you the things your parents didn't teach you about living a balanced life, from career through to spirituality, knowledge through to inspiration, exercise through to wealth, and nutrition through to relationships. We help inspire you with the confidence for your own personal development journey. Welcome back, guys. Today, again, we have Kate Owen on the show, and I'm really excited to bring Kate back for the second episode. Now, last time Kate and I met, we talked all about stress and anxiety. We defined stress and anxiety. We talked about some of the physical symptoms and signs. We talked about the causes and what actually happens in the brain and body. And we also talked about what stress is good for you and what stress is bad for you, and where and how you can work out if your stress is good or is bad. We also talked about how you can cope, and Kate gave us two practical tips. One of those was a breathing exercise that we did, and the other one was a visualization exercise that we did. And Kate is the author of Keep Calm Cards, and we did use those cards to facilitate those exercises. So today, in our second episode, we're talking to Kate all about family relationships. So welcome back, Kate.
Thanks, James. I'm excited to be here again.
And we're excited to have you. So just to start off with, if our listeners are just tuning in today and haven't heard the first episode, can we just ask you about what you do, your why, and how you came about or how you came into that field?
Yep, awesome. So I'm a clinical psychologist and I'm a clinical family therapist, and I've been working in the mental health and counselling field for over 20 years. And so I should also say, like I did at the first episode, because I am a helping professional, today when I'm chatting about these things, I'm giving all this information for, you know, education, information, for increasing knowledge, but it's not a substitute for therapy. And so if people are really struggling in their relationships, I really encourage you to go and seek professional assistance. So now that I've got the disclaimer out of the way, so I was saying in the first episode, I've always been a helper. And ever since I was, you know, growing up and in high school, I was always the go-to person for people that wanted to chat about anything. And so I just naturally went into psychology. Having worked then in that field for a while, I really felt like, oh, I just want to work not just with the individual, but with the people around them. And so then I found my love for family therapy. And that's what I've been doing now for a really long time. And so I have my private practice, and I have lots of resources for the community and online courses, the Keep Calm cards. But also I really love teaching family therapy as well. And so I'm a co-director at the Queensland Institute of Family Therapy. And my big why, my passion for becoming a family therapist, is that if I can help someone in the here and the now, in this generation, and if that can change things like patterns of behavior or anything to be more helpful and healthy, then that's going to be a beautiful ripple effect for the next generation. And so I feel really privileged with the people I work with today, because it's very possible that the influence that I have in their life can actually ripple across generations to come.
Oh, that's such a nice way of putting it, Kate.
Thanks.
Multi-generational messaging. I love that.
Yeah, that's what I'm all about.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll jump straight into it. So as a family therapist, why are you, and I know picking up from what you just said, why would you say you're so interested in relationships?
Well, on top of what I said just now, one of the key reasons that family therapists are interested in relationships is because as human beings, we are relational creatures and we are wired for connection. And what I guess the perception that we hold as a family therapist is that people come in to see us and we can't just discount their context. We can't just see them as just this one person and not think about all of the relationships and context that they're embedded in. And so if someone comes to see me and they're experiencing anxiety or they're experiencing depression, if I explore the relationships around them, I'm going to find clues as to which relationships help that person in terms of their symptoms. And I might even also find some clues as to which relationships exacerbate those symptoms and make things worse. And so I'm interested in the person in their current context in life. I'm interested in their relationships across time and what has shaped them to be who they are now. And multi-generational patterns. I'm super interested in how our family history and our ancestors, their relationship patterns, how that influences us across time as well.
So what commonly actually gets in the way of healthy relationships then? What are some of the hurdles or barriers?
Okay, so short answer, lots of things. But one thing we might do today is focus on anxiety. And that stems from our first episode we did together about stress and anxiety. But what I find as a family therapist is that anxiety in relationships gets in the way. Okay, now what does it look like? This might be really interesting for people. And I really want people to know, and even for yourself, James, that the examples I give, everyone is going to say, oh my gosh, I do that. We do that in my family. So I just want to say from the start, all of this is really normal stuff to happen, yeah? Okay, so anxiety in relationships, what does it look like? So imagine that you have a fight with someone, and it could be a fight with your partner, or it might be a fight with your sibling, or a fight with your mum, let's just say, or a work colleague. Now, because that tension is there in the relationship, as humans, we're likely to react in one of two ways. We're either likely to swing towards cutoff, disconnection, get away from me. And what that might look like is you've had the fight, and so then that's it. Silent treatment for a week. I'm not replying to your text messages. I'm not picking up the phone. When you walk in and say hello, I'm turning the other way. And so that is a common thing that people might do when there's tension and anxiety in the relationship, is wanting to cut off from the person, right? Now, equally, on the other end of the continuum, if you have a, you know, tension in a relationship, cutting off from someone actually creates more anxiety for you. And so you actually want to really connect with them. You want to be reassured that everything's okay. You want to reassure them that everything's okay. And so you have a bit of an argument, and then instead of not replying to the text messages, you're texting 20 times in the day. How are you feeling? Are we okay now? I'm really sorry about this morning. Can we catch up later? I feel really bad. And then a week's gone by and you're still checking in. Are you sure we're okay? Because we had that thing the other week and, oh, I'm still worried about it. Okay, so when there's tension and anxiety in relationships, then as humans, we might swing to cutting off, or we might swing to seeking reassurance. Now, they look very different, but they're fueled by the same thing. That's a way to manage the tension in the relationship. Now, some other common patterns when anxiety gets into relationships. James, have you ever heard of triangles before, or triangulation?
Yeah, in a navigation context, but I'm guessing that's not what you're talking about.
Well, let's see. I don't know. Maybe there's some crossover. So when anxiety gets into a relationship, then, and again, you know, there's a tension between you and that other person. What do we tend to do? You know, I've had a fight with my partner. So who do I tend to call?
Yeah, your friend, your parent, your sister.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. So I've walked out of the house and I'm fuming, and I get in the car and I hit the, you know, the speed dial, and I'm talking to my best friend as I'm driving down the road.
I should say, well, people that will normally have your back, people that will agree with you.
That's right. Yeah. So that people who will let you vent and let you just let off steam, right? Okay. Now, again, disclaimer, totally normal. This is human beings in our lives. This is what we do. And triangles can be really helpful, you know, because, oh, now I feel better. But what if I never address the conflict with my partner? What if I'm always just calling my best friend and venting? Because then when I get home, I don't have to address the conflict anymore because I've already let off steam to someone. And so, oh, we never have to address anything. Let's keep on going. And so then that might not be so useful. We're not managing the tension in the couple relationship. Another way that anxiety can get in the way of relationships is creating this over-functioning, under-functioning dynamic between people. And so that is when someone in the relationship is stressed and anxious about the other person, and so they do everything for them. Oh, it's just easier if I do it. Oh, it's quicker if I get it done. Oh, no, you know, they won't be able to cope with it. So I will do it for them. Now, don't get me wrong. Being helpful is really lovely and super helpful. And I'm a helper, so I get it. But when we're over-functioning as a way of trying to manage tension in the relationship, then it can take its toll over time. So there's just like a few examples of how anxiety, yeah, creates hurdles and what it looks like.
Yeah. I was just thinking while you were saying that, if you have someone that is very anxious to reconnect after a rupture and you're having someone that gives the other, that person the cold treatment and is avoidant, wouldn't that create further anxiety? Yeah.
You've nailed it. And so what happens is that we call this the distancer-pursuer dance. And so there's one person who wants to distance, and that triggers the other person. And so then they want to pursue them to seek that comfort, which triggers the other person, so they distance even more. And so both people in that relationship responding to the tension is they're just coming at it from different ways of how to manage it, but then it's creating this relational dance that's keeping the anxiety stuck in the relationship.
Mm. And for that, for the distancer to come, like, well, how's that ever solved?
Like, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Great question. Okay. And can I say, lifelong process. Everybody has to keep working on this, you know, until we're old and gray. So let me work through a bit of a step-by-step guide for people to think about these things. So whether they're a distancer, whether they're a pursuer, whether they use triangles, whether they overfunction, let me run you through a bit of a tip sheet. And then we can talk about rupture and repair as like a specific topic.
Yep.
So I call this like bringing your best self to a relationship, right? Because if you're distancing or if you're pursuing and there's all this tension going on, both of you aren't bringing your best selves to the relationship, are you, right? So step number one, observe. Be curious about your level of anxiety in relationships. And so be really reflective. Look for those patterns with your partner, or look for your patterns in relationship with your parents or your siblings, work colleagues, etc. Like, really just take the time to be a detective to figure it out. Now, once you go, oh gosh, okay, I cut off, I distance in my relationships with X, Y, and Z, then the next step is, when that happens, because it will, then you created awareness, fantastic. Step number two is reduce the tension within yourself. So all of those strategies that we talked about last time, great strategies to calm yourself down so that you can then think about what you would like to do differently. So step number one, get really curious about your patterns and anxiety in relationships. Step number two, learn strategies to regulate, really important. Because step number three is evaluate for yourself. Is this how I want to be in a relationship? Am I comfortable cutting off from people? Like, is that how I truly want to be in a relationship with people in the world? What are my values about being in a relationship? What's important to me in terms of being a partner or being a son or being a work colleague? And ask yourself this question. It's one of my favorite questions of all time. what would being the best version of myself look like? Because what we're doing is we're trying to unprogram lots of different patterning, either multi-generationally or things that we've sort of learnt throughout life. And so we need to have a picture in our mind of, well, who do we truly want to be if we could have the choice to be our best selves in a relationship? And so then once you've figured out how you'd like to be in that relationship, it's about putting it into action and finding the opportunities to break the pattern, to do something different. And it takes hard work. So it's like repetition, repetition, repetition. And we're always going to react. So like if we're a distancer, our automatic default is distance. But when we catch it, we calm down, we think it through, we go, oh no, I want to do things differently now. And then we can do the different pattern that we're wanting. And so if we can do that, it creates space for the other person to also bring their best self into the relationship as well. So hard work, but a good blueprint there. What do you think?
Yeah, it sounds really good. I think I'm prepared for the next part, which I'm about to ask you, is the importance of repair in a rupture and repair in a relationship. So I think you've sort of set that up quite nicely.
So rupture and repair, really super important. So when we think, so rupture is the disconnect that happens in a relationship, and so the repair is the restoration. And ruptures happen all the time, even little micro ruptures. So they're really normal. What I don't think we do well in society is the repair side of things. And if we're talking about rupture and repair with parents to children, parents should be the responsible one to initiate the repair. When we're talking about adult to adult relationships, then we have to think about, okay, it's a healthy, mature response to be able to actually come back together to do the repair process. So what's the benefits of the repair process? Strengthens the relationship because you're building trust, shows commitment to the relationship. If you then have kids, it's a great template and role modeling for your children. And also, if you're an adult and you didn't really have repairs growing up with significant others, being able to have rupture and then repair as an adult is what we call a corrective emotional experience. So those are all the reasons why repair is really important. Would you like me to run you through a bit of a template on how to do it?
Yeah, I think so. Some practical tips would be helpful.
Okay, awesome. So first tip, don't try and repair if you're still annoyed with the other person. It's not going to work. And so only reconnect when both people are in a calmer space to be able to tolerate having a discussion. Tip number two, set aside any hope that you have of trying to win the argument or get the person to see your side of the situation. That's not what the repair is about. The repair is about reconnecting the relationship, not problem solving the conflict that happened. You can acknowledge that the rupture has happened. Say, hey, look, we had that falling out the other day. And yeah, it was pretty messy, wasn't it? All right, so let's try and talk this through. So just acknowledging that it happened. Don't sweep it under the carpet. A good tip is then for each person just to be able to tell their side of the story about what happened during the rupture. And it's not about blaming or criticizing. It's just talking from their position. So those I statements, I felt really dismissed and I thought that you were being critical of me. And so my perception was this. And then the other person, they get to also state their story in a calm way without blame and criticizing, etc. Then what's pretty super cool to do is if the partner reflects back the story that's being told to them. It's not to interpret it, not to justify it, not to give reasons to their behavior, but simply to restate the story. Okay, so the other day you felt dismissed because X, Y, and Z, and then this happened. Okay, and then again you swap and the other person can do the same thing. If you can, it's really nice to offer each other validation. That must have been really tough for you, and that must have been really tough for you too. Apologize if needed, but sometimes that can get a bit tricky when it comes to repair. So sometimes it's best just to say we have different points of view about what happened, but are we both willing to move forward in our relationship. And if both people agree, that's a great start to get the repair happening. And then if you do need to problem solve anything because of the actual rupture that happened, then you can go into problem solving mode. But the repair in the relationship is the first step. So there's a few ideas.
Yeah, thanks, Kate. I love that. I think I'll use that to arm myself next time I go into a into a family conflict. So I'm just thinking about a disagreement my sister and I had recently, and we didn't formally follow that process, but it was something like that. We both kind of acknowledged each other's points of view and realized, like, who really cares what we're arguing about? It doesn't actually matter. And just said we would do things differently moving forward. So yeah,
that's fantastic.
It was, yeah, quite productive. So
that's fantastic. That's fantastic. And you have to make the repair natural and work for you instead of being this forced, you know, scripted experience. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Kate. Well, this final thing I wanted to ask you is where can people find you?
Okay, so I've got the two umbrellas that I operate under. So if you go to www.drkateowen.com, so drkateowen.com, that will link you to all of my Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, my YouTube channel, my online courses, all my free resources, which is great for the community and the Keep Calm cards. If you've been listening to the podcast and you're a mental health or counseling professional and you're interested in like family therapy training and resources, then jump across to the Queensland Institute of Family Therapy. So that's all the W's, QLDFamilyTherapy.com, and that then links to all the socials, resources, YouTube channels, etc.
Okay, perfect. We'll put all that in the show notes. Thanks again, sorry, for coming on the show. We really appreciate your insights.
Thanks, James, and thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Holistic You podcast, where we inspire you with the confidence to live a happy, healthy, and more balanced life. If you found today's content meaningful, please tag me in your stories or posts, or follow me on Instagram. Like and subscribe, and leave a 5-star written review.